Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, happy Friday. Hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on October 17th. Coming up today, protesters are gathering to demand an end to Operation Brock. Kent's gritters are getting primed for the winter ahead, and we'll take a look at this weekend's Gillingham fixture. But first, taking a look at our top story today. There have been tributes to the boss of a Medway taxi company after he died suddenly a week before his daughter's wedding in Spain. Lucy's been following this story for the podcast. She's with me now with some more details. First of all, Luce, can you tell us about Lance Riddon and why he was so well known?
Yes, well, as you say, Lance was known for co-running the Vokes taxi empire, which spanned across Medway. He's been working to build up the company across the towns for the last 20 years, taking over six competitor firms. Vokes, which has its main office in Old Road in Chatham, started off with about 50 drivers and now has more than 200 on the books. Lance and his company also invested heavily in community projects, sponsoring his son's football teams, Chatham Town Football Club, and charities, including the Rotary Club's Santa Fun Run.
Right, and so what do we know about the circumstances surrounding his death?
Well, the 66-year-old was in southern Spain for the wedding of his daughter last month. It's thought he suffered a heart attack while staying at a luxury resort in Marbella on September 14th, just a week before the ceremony was due to take place. The close-knit family came together to make sure the wedding went ahead. His speech was read out by his wife, Sue. Fortunately, Lance's daughter Hannah and husband Jack had held a low-key, smaller registry office wedding in London a few weeks beforehand, where Lance was able to fulfil his role of father of the bride.
Incredibly sad. And how have the community reacted to the news?
His death has prompted a wave of grief among hundreds of cabbies and thousands of customers across Medway. Well-wishers have described him as a true gentleman, one in a million, larger than life and a legend. He'll be farewelled at a service at Medway Crematorium on October 28th. Instead of flowers, the family have asked for donations to be made to baby loss charity Abigail's Footsteps.
Thanks, Lucy.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today. A Margate man found guilty of carrying out multiple sex offences against a child has been sent to prison. Police say Stephen Riley carried out the abuse over nearly two decades and his crime only came to light after the victim came forward. The 63-year-old from Hastings Avenue has been locked up for 19 years. A Hungarian man has been sent to prison after being caught with £3 million worth of heroin in the back of his lorry in Dover. The 54-year-old was stopped with 29 kilos of the drug in July 2022. He denied the offences, but his fingerprints were found on the boxes. A chain of messages also revealed he'd planned to smuggle double the amount. He's been locked up for 13 years. The family of a Canterbury post office worker who was convicted of theft say they're thrilled the case has been referred to the Court of Appeal. Pat Owen is thought to have fallen victim to the faulty capture system, which predates the Horizon software. She died in 2003, but her conviction is now among those that could be overturned. Three people have been arrested following reports of a break-in at a pub in Folkestone. Officers were called to the Samuel Pito Wetherspoons on Rendezvous Street in the early hours of yesterday. A window was broken and bottles of alcohol are believed to have been taken. One man and two women remain in custody. Police are investigating after several windows were smashed at a beauty salon in Snodland. A baseball bat is thought to have been used to vandalise luxury nails on Holborough Road on Sunday night. The owners say they don't understand the destruction and have thanked the community for their support. Elsewhere, six people have been arrested following an immigration raid at a nail salon in Sittingbourne. The Home Office visited Joy Nails on the High Street on Wednesday and detained two men and four women. A civil penalty referral notice has been served as investigators look into whether they hired illegal workers.
Kent Online News.
Bosses at the Uni of Kent are pushing ahead with plans for 2,000 homes on nearby countryside, despite local bosses withdrawing their support. The land north of its city campus has been earmarked as a rural settlement, but it's been taken off council's draft local plan. The move was seen as a win by campaigners who want the land protected. Julia Kirby-Smith is chair of the Save Our Blean group. She's been speaking to Megan Shaw from our colleagues at KMTV.
Only a month ago, we heard from Canterbury Council that they had considered all the evidence and decided this site was not viable for four main reasons that were all to do with the technicalities of deliverability and viability, things like the highways not being sufficient, the access not being sufficient, and they've deleted it out of the draft local plan. Last night I get a letter as chair of Save the Blean from the University of Kent saying they are basically going to ignore that, and they found a developer partner, and they're going to push ahead with trying to bring 2,000 houses to this swathe of countryside. And you just think, these are elected councillors, and the Canterbury Council Planning Department have made a decision, and they've used all of their knowledge and their technical expertise to say this is not a viable site, but the university thinks better and wants to push ahead. We're absolutely shocked, really. It feels like they're not listening, they're not taking account of the due process, and clearly they think they can work with this developer partner that they found to appeal against the council, to put pressure on them constantly, and to just keep going until they squash the council into submission. Well, we as a campaign group will fight them all the way, and we're going to use all legal means to do so.
And perhaps the counter argument to that is that University of Kent are kind of maybe struggling financially. There might be lots of people who are in need of a home and kind of want to move in here. What do you kind of say to that?
So the University of Kent argues that this needs to happen because it's serving the needs of the district in terms of housing. But the location here is so far out of town that you would have to drive a car to get in and out of town. We know the buses here are not frequent enough to be viable. We know that people don't cycle from here because it's hilly. So this is not the right site to put useful housing. We need housing near Canterbury city centre, we need to densify the city, and we need affordable housing and social housing, not executive homes, which is what you get in a sort of countryside location like this. Also, we know that the university is struggling financially, and that is the big driver here. And to be honest, we wish they would just say that and just come out with it and kind of go, yeah, we're trying to make things work, instead of all this stuff about, you know, housing in the district. And partly that is because we as a campaign group have evolved into a positive group of trying to propose a solution. And we've come up with a thing called the Blean Biopark, which would afford the university loads of ways to sell bits of this land, to create revenue from it. And we've done our best to create a solution for them that would give them the finances that they need. In the letter that we received last night, they said, we reject that proposal. We're not going to do that. We want to go for the big money with the housing. And you just think, where's the vision? How are you going to attract students with 2,000 houses and a massive building site on your doorstep? Where's the vision?
The uni say the development is essential to generating income and securing their long-term future. People living in a village between Canterbury and Herne Bay say Lego-style modern houses will ruin the area's rural character. It's after plans were submitted for 21 new homes on land off School Lane in Hoth, which is only home to a few hundred people. Residents fear the project would negatively increase traffic and impact road safety. Demolition work is set to get underway on a building in Ashford that's been derelict for 20 years. Swanton House, next to Ashford College in Elwick Road, is due to be replaced by two new housing blocks up to four stories high. Planning permission was granted in 2021, but there have been delays over environmental concerns. Hoardings will go up later this month. Residents living next to a cycle track in Folkestone have raised safeguarding concerns, with some saying children are peering directly into their homes. The £150,000 circuit is part of Folkestone Academy. When it was proposed, council said it would not impact on nearby properties. Neighbours want a screen or a fence put up. The schools say there are already sufficient security measures in place.
Kent Online News.
A Kent MP is urging people to join a planned protest against Operation Brock. Helen Waitley, who represents Faversham, is leading a rally at Maidstone Services calling for urgent action. She's also launched a petition. The Contraflow system is activated on the M20 during busy travel periods to ease pressure on the Port of Dover. I've been speaking to Helen.
When there's a risk and a worry that there might be increased traffic at Dover, then that's when we're seeing the Operation Brock put on in advance, and then in the moment it's up, it starts causing delays and causing the rerouting and things like that. So that's over caution and having no alternative. So I'm saying that we need something better than the system that there is in place now, the Operation Brock. So one of the things that I want to see is a reduced version of it, sometimes called Mini Brock, which wouldn't have such a big impact, that would be just between junctions at 8 and 9 and actually not affecting the junction at junction 8. So that would reduce the impact of Operation Brock on the area around and on the use of the motorway. Then there's another thing that I want to see, which is that you'd have a much shorter turnaround time on the deployment. So at the moment, it takes like a week or something to put it out. Actually, if it does have to go out, it should be going out for a much shorter period, like maybe just 48 hours, not for a week, not for 2 weeks, as we see it for those much longer periods of time. But ultimately, what I really want to see is no more Operation Brock and a different answer to managing the pressures and the traffic down at Dover and down at the short straits for people trying to get to and from France.
Now, I know a lot of people have been talking about a long-term solution, a long-term replacement, I suppose, for Operation Brock, and we've had various, suggestions come through in that time. Are there any suggestions for a replacement that you particularly favour?
Well, one of the things that I know is now being looked into is whether you can use technology to get lorries to stop further away rather than come all the way to Kent and be queuing in Kent when they're trying to get across the channel. Can you use things like automatic number plate recognition of lorries that are booked on to go across the channel? And can you look at other waiting areas? Because actually now, we're at a time where we really shouldn't have to wait until lorries are most of the way down to the channel if it's well known that there's going to be more traffic and there's not going to be room for them on the ferry and that they're going to have to queue.
And now, when you mentioned that before the rally, you're meeting with members of the Kent Resilience Forum. Is that right?
Yes, so what I'm doing is I've got a meeting with that involves local representatives from the local parish councils that are most affected and the Kent Resilience Forum. They're the ones that are involved in putting Operation Brock on and making the decisions around this. So I want to bring those local representatives together with the decision makers to have that conversation and to say to them, so the Kent Resilience Forum, very frankly, this has really got to change and this is what local people want.
And you've launched a petition as well, is that right?
I've also launched a petition for people who can't make it to the rally to show that they agree that they reckon Operation Brock needs to stop, to sign up to that petition to show the strength of feeling around this. And it's one of the top topics that comes up when I'm out and about in parts of my constituency that get really affected by some of the rat running and the lorries going the wrong routes when this happens. And just for too long, it's just been allowed to go on. So this is a moment when people can sign up, sign the petition, and say they want it to stop.
80% of people surveyed at Kent Online want the scheme scrapped. Head to the website to have your say. Part of the A28 will be closed overnight for 2 weeks while highways bosses carry out resurfacing work. The stretch off the Princes Road interchange in Dartford will be partially shut from November the 10th until the 24th. National highways will have diversions in place. A facility that'll help increase the amount of copper that's recycled across the country has opened in Northfleet. Britannia Refined Metals have spent £43 million on developing their site to meet global demand for the metal. It'll be able to deal with 25,000 tonnes of waste a year and has created 20 jobs. That's on top of the 150 already employed there. A permanent community diagnostic centre has officially opened in Dartford in a bid to bring down NHS wait times. The new medical centre at Livingstone Community Hospital replaces the temporary building, which opened in November 2023. The site has MRI and CT scanners, treatment and assessment rooms. Bosses hope it'll free up vital resources at the nearby Darren Valley Hospital.
Kent Online News.
The winter season has officially started for Kent's Gritters, with teams out for the annual parade this morning. It's an opportunity for teams across the county to familiarise themselves with the routes they'll be covering. I've been speaking to Toby Howe, who is the Strategic Resilience Manager for KCC Highways.
We always start our winter period through of mid-October and go through to mid-April. Before now, we have still had some cold nights during October, so we need to be prepared. And what we do with this day is all of the drivers from our contractor, they go out in the trucks that have come back from maintenance, etc. They check the routes, make sure the routes are all still clear, make sure they're okay, because we have up to 60 routes, so it's a very large county to cover. So we like to make sure that before the cold weather hits, we are actually out there checking those routes, making sure that everybody knows what they're doing.
I suppose it's practice for the drivers as well. Some of them, it might be their first winter season driving the gritters, so they get to know the roads and the routes that they'll be taking.
Exactly, that is the case. And also some of the lorries are a bit different. So what we do is those trucks are leased for each winter period. So they go back to the supplier throughout the summer, and sometimes we'll get some new trucks back. So it might be a slightly different lorry, different layout as well, and as you say, possibly new drivers. So it's making sure that everything is up to date so that when we do get that first cold snap and they need to go out, we're confident that it will be done safely.
Can you tell me a little bit about the resources that KCC has, the amount of salt vehicles that we've got, the tons of salt that we might have, any details?
We have six depots across the county, each which have a very good stock of salt throughout the winter. We also have resilience available as well, should we need it. That stock is updated prior to the winter, so each of our depots across the county has a salt barn full of salt ready to go. And that gets restocked through the summer so that we don't run out. So, if, for example, in 2017, 2018, when we had a lot of snow, really bad winter, we make sure that that salt is updated throughout. So, the six depots cover the whole road network that we maintain in Kent to make sure there is ample coverage.
Last year, KMFM listeners named their own Gritter, but this is the first year Grittosaurus Rex will be part of the team on the streets. A scarecrow trail gets underway today in a village near Sittingbourne. The event in Lower Halstow is returning for its sixth year with a theme this time of music icons. Organisers say it's a chance for families to come out and enjoy people's creativity. You can see the scarecrows between now and next Sunday. More than 40 music acts are going to be performing in Folkestone over the next 2 days. Eight venues in the town's creative quarter will be hosting this year's Compass Festival. It's the second year it's taken place with the aim of highlighting independent artists from the southeast. A homelessness charity in Dover is celebrating its 30th anniversary. Emmaus has supported more than 1,700 people with housing, work and training since opening in 1995. They're holding a supper quiz night this evening to mark the occasion. And a Dover man has been telling us how he broke a world record after taking up running following a diagnosis of MS. The condition affects the brain and can cause mobility issues and tiredness. Tom Mears was diagnosed in his early 20s and recently became the fastest person with MS to run a half marathon with a time of 1 hour and 33 minutes. He's now setting his sights on the 2028 Paralympics in LA. He's been chatting to Lucy about his journey.
I've never been such a runner. I've done other sports, done football and go to the gym, but a lot of it to do with, because I've got MS, I kind of looked a bit more into it and about how the benefits in the future it could help. And a lot of it to do was I saw a lot with running and inspiration. So I looked at that and running was a big factor. So even though I wasn't at first motivated, I kind of want to put my health first in it. So that's what overall inspired me to start running.
And how does the MS affect your running?
So the MS overall with the running, it is a hit and miss. MS is a disease where it's sometimes with people it's invisible, where people could look at me running and think, oh, he's completely fine and has nothing wrong with him. But there is days of fatigueness and days where my legs won't feel 100%. But a lot of that is to do with, I think in my eyes, it's mentality and it's trying to push through the pain. And then after you do the run, you then feel completely better. And it's just a factor about the feel good in there.
And you were also contacted by Paralympics GB, is that right?
It was a great surprise when that happened. It was I've always wanted to be in sport in some kind of way, and I've had a few chats with them overall. I've joined a run club, and that's preparing me for the track event that I'm trying to go into. With MS, you can only go into certain track events with the Paralympics and everything to do with that. And I've done a few competitions and I've done quite well on them. And as we speak right now, I'm slowly on course to hopefully make it.
Kent Online Sports.
Football now, and it's an away game for Gillingham in League Two this weekend. They're travelling to take on Grimsby Town. They're sitting third in the table after last week's 1-1 draw with Cheltenham. Tomorrow's opponents are in fifth. Assistant manager Richard Dobson says he's looking forward to another good game.
They're a good side at the top end of the league for a reason. I watched their game against Manchester United in the Cup earlier in the season, and they were excellent on the night, thoroughly deserved their win. So we're well aware of the threats that they pose. Really bright attacking front five. So it'll be a good test for us, but you know, we've had a good look at them and we feel that there's weaknesses that we can expose. So I'm expecting it to be a good game.
Does anyone come back into the fold? Is anyone definitely missing out? Are you able to kind of Bringing any injured players back into the squad?
Yeah, Marnie's back around the group now, which is good. We've missed him, obviously. Leadership and strong influence amongst the group. So we'll see whether he starts or comes off the bench at the weekend, but he'll be around with us.
Just had Seb Palmer-Holden in here. He's known for his tenacity and chases absolutely everything. From a coach's perspective, he must be a fantastic forward to have as an option.
He is. He's a dream, yeah. Yeah, we looked at him towards the end of last season, actually, and I remember being on the coach, and Andy Hessenthaler had sent me his name and said, "Can you have a look?" And we're travelling up somewhere up north, and I saw the clips of him watched on Y Scout. We have Y Scout, and I texted Andy Hessenthaler straight away and went, "I love him." And he said, "Well, speak with Joe." Dan Joe had him at Newport for a while, so I phoned Joe and I said, "Talk to me about Seb Palmer-Holden." And Joe went, "You'll love him." I said, I do love him. He chases everything. He's energetic. He's going to have goals in him because he puts himself in goal scoring areas. But he's just got an enthusiasm and an energy about him that people warm to, whether it's teammates or those watching from the terraces. You can't help but like him because of his enthusiasm for the game and the energy that he puts into it.
Get Josh Andrews back this weekend, of course, having completed his suspension, so that's a good plus for you as well.
Yep. Josh gives us another option in attack, so we're pretty strong in that area at the moment. Seem to have everybody fit, I believe, at the moment, so it's a nice problem to have. Different types of players, different types of ways of doing it, and it's always good to be able to have that up your sleeve.
Kick-off tomorrow is at 3. Meanwhile, demolition work has started at Gillingham's Priestfield Stadium ahead of the construction of a fan zone. Buildings behind the Rainham End are being knocked down to make way for a new area with food and drink kiosks, benches and a play area. It'll be covered by a large tented structure with room for 900 supporters. That's all for us today and for the week. Thank you ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups and exclusive stories. You can choose the subscription plan that works best for you. To find out more, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.